On today's College Football Inquiry, national championship winning coach leaves college basketball for the NBA. How soon before the NFL comes calling for the very best of the college football coaches as those skill sets start to merge? Plus, we go over the amendments to the Protect College Sports Act. There's one particularly sticky one. We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquiry. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and gentlemen, there was a little bit of news on Monday in the world of college sports that it was college basketball news, but I have a feeling every athletic director who has a good young college football coach who has adapted well to the NIL era probably said, huh, this is very interesting. And so the news was Dusty May, the head coach of the national champion Michigan Wolverines, leaving to become the Dallas Mavericks head coach. So he will coach Cooper Flagg in the NBA. But I'm more curious because it was fascinating to me because it's so crazy that it's Michigan's head coach. Because you had the last two national championship coaches at Michigan have gone to the pros. Now, Jim Harbaugh is a little bit different animal. We can talk about why later. But also, two basketball coaches ago at Michigan, their coach left for the NBA, John Beilein. And he was probably the worst fit ever, college to the NBA. Didn't even last a full season. And it was so crazy just juxtaposing these two guys. Because here was John Beilein, who was maybe the most ideally suited coach for the pre-NIL era, who had no concept of how to deal with players who had agency. And then Dusty May, who's been doing all the things that NBA coaches have to do, except on steroids for the last 6 years.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I was talking to some people at Michigan yesterday, and it wasn't one of those things where it's like, we probably knew this would happen, or we were thinking this would happen. It was more like, what the F happened? Like, they were really kind of shocked by it all, or at least that's what they expressed to me. But, you know, Andy, I think we've seen a lot of coaches and ADs bow out of the college athletics industry because of the situation with NIL and the portal and all that stuff. And that may have been at play here, but the way that you can assemble a basketball roster now in college is similar, at least more similar than it was previously, of doing it in the NBA at the pro level. And I'm guessing NBA programs are taking notice of that. And very soon, if not already, you would think NFL will take notice of that too.
I think they did with Marcus Freeman, and he just said no.
I would say they've kicked the tires a good bit. Kicking the tires would imply one visit to the dealership. I feel like several NFL teams have maybe made that second test drive on Marcus Freeman.
Happened,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to back up and explain why this is happening. And it's not just because of name, image, and likeness and the idea of a professional roster construction, although that's a big part of it. I just think that, and I can only speak to football because I am a basketball novice. I wouldn't want to talk about basketball scheme. If I had a gun to my head, we'd be in trouble. But in the NFL, the concept of borrowing ideas between pro and college, I really think that line of communication has never been stronger. And I think you've seen more movement in both directions in the last 10 years than at any other period of the sport. Now, there's myriad reasons why. We can get into scheme, Andy. Ross, we could talk about the professionalization of the organizational structure at the big franchises of college and how that's very similar to the NFL. But it used to be a pretty decent wall was between the NFL and college. Once in a while, you would kind of have a chosen one who would be anointed to go up to the NFL and have some success, right? We could name coaches who had success in the NFL with a college pedigree. Bill Walsh, Jimmy Johnson. We could remember some guys.
Jim Harbaugh is probably the most recent one, and I don't mean I mean from Stanford to the NFL. Like, when he went back to the NFL, we already knew he was a good NFL coach.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh is, as always, an outlier. It's hard to factor him in as an example because he also keeps crossing back and forth. He played the position in the NFL, I think, of quarterback, which is a big deal. So, yes, Jim Harbaugh is a great example. He's probably not the most common. What I was going to say is there's also a very healthy amount of cautionary tales, right? We saw Steve Spurrier not work out in the NFL. Most recently, we saw Matt Rhule, where it felt like Matt Rhule kind of had the adaptability pedigree, having gone through these really unique situations in college at different programs, succeeding at them. You thought, oh, okay, well, this is a guy, he's good at delegating. He's a good CEO style. He's a really good kind of statesman head coach, good with PR. And then he just could never get it going in Carolina. And the reports were basically that he had too much of a collegiate atmosphere. So it's not one thing that's doing this. It's kind of 100 things. Now, does this mean Kirby Smart is the next head coach of your Atlanta Falcons? I don't know, guys. I don't know. I wish you'd stop asking, honestly. But it does mean that Marcus Freeman won't be alone. And I do think that you'll see some I also think the reverse is true as well. Hey, look at Todd Monken. That's a great example as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, Todd Monken was a good college coordinator, becomes a good NFL coordinator. Now he's an NFL head coach. He was a decent college head coach at Southern Miss. We don't really know what's going to happen as he coaches the Browns. It's also he's coaching the Browns. But the thing about this, and I wrote a column about this for On3, and I wanted to make clear in the column, like, this isn't a woe it is everybody, college sports is falling apart, all these people want to leave. I'm sure they do want to leave. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, there's only 30 NBA jobs and 32 NFL jobs. Most of them would have wanted to leave for those anyway. What is interesting about this and different about this is that instead of when it happened, it was always like a desperate franchise looking at, you know, somebody who may or may not have been a fit.
Yeah, that's an unconventional hire.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. This is, you do the things we need done. Mm-hmm. And you do them in a probably more pressurized environment than the guy doing it now. Like, Dusty May is a good example of this. Like, Dusty May was going to have to reinvent his roster at Michigan. He got, you know, some of those players were coming back. Like, Elliot Cadeau was coming back. But at the Mavericks, he has Cooper Flagg on a guaranteed contract for the next 4 years. And then they have his bird rights. So they can offer him more money than anyone else can at the end of those 4 years. So you actually have something you can build around. It's probably easier now to be an NBA or NFL head coach than it is to be a good college head coach, which was not the case before.
You need to look at the desperation factor of, is the coach just wanting any NFL job he can get?
Right.
All right. That would speak to a tremendous amount of it. Let's just talk about head coaches for a second in college. Okay. Let's talk about, I want you to picture the top 50 programs. God knows I'm not going to make that list for you. And you can say maybe underneath about 6 to 8 of those head coaches at the very top, if the worst NFL franchise that is run the worst, has the worst GM, has the worst ownership, calls you tomorrow, and you're a head coach of the 15th best or 20th best program in college, you're going. You're going. I want to be clear about something, though.
Matt Campbell did not take the Lions job.
The only one I can think of that didn't go. Yeah.
I think he also turned on the Jets, too.
I would. Yeah. We might put Matt Campbell on a shelf here for a second.
Was it the Bears, too?
Hashtag Bill
Belichick. Maybe I'm thinking of the Lions. The Bears, but they didn't offer. I can't remember. They were going after Ben Johnson the whole time.
Hashtag, I would say hashtag built different. Old school, yeah. Maybe to his detriment, but
yeah, he's like the only one I can think of.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. So the very top guys, Ryan Day, Marcus Freeman, Kirby Smart, I'll pause there before sort of advancing that list and we get into the debate territory. I think they would exercise a little bit of discretion, not unlike Campbell for more, I would say, philosophical reasons. That like the what you just set up, Andy, with Dusty May having a pretty nice situation with Cooper Flagg and
right,
the ability.
This is not a bad NBA job.
Not at all. Yeah. This is not the Pelicans. Like, this is I don't know how bad the Pelicans are. I just kind of pulled that one out of thin air. Sorry, not an NBA guy.
Fully run.
Go Hawks. The situation for a Ryan Day or Kirby Smart or Marcus Freeman is they're going to have, I would say, a little bit of hesitation, a little bit of pause. So if the Jets call, as the Jets call everybody every 18 to 24 months, I don't think a Marcus Freeman jumps on that job. Okay. I do think that Marcus Freeman wants to win a national title first or come as close as possible within a reasonable range of time at Notre Dame. And then he's going to start looking at good NFL jobs. And I think the same would be true for Kirby, or the same would be true for Ryan Day. Now, the rest of those guys, anybody calls, you're going.
Yeah, you know, one thing that sets like Dusty apart from a lot of what we're hearing and seeing in college is he didn't complain. In fact, he embraced like everything about the new landscape. And then I saw also maybe he did like a podcast interview right after the season where he stumped in support for collective bargaining and employment, actually, I believe. So he was like all in on sort of the landscape. And while I'm sure he wanted more rules and regulations around all this, he sort of took it, took advantage of it. And that's that. I think I'm sure that plays well at the next level. I'm sure that attracted him to the next level.
And the thing is, like, the changes made him a better coach. Like, if you look at, so he got hired at Florida Atlantic in 2018, so that he had two solid years pre NIL, which they weren't very good. It was when NIL and transfer portal started that they got good, and so the changes allowed him to become what he became. And that's going to be the key here. Because, Godfrey, you mentioned, obviously, Marcus Freeman, Ryan Day, all those guys. Now, I would argue Marcus Freeman, we don't know what he would have been pre-NIL as a head coach, but he's been excellent as an NIL-era head coach. He's been perfectly adapted to it. But the coaches who got better when the rules changed, or the coaches who have just thrived in the new market. Now, it's interesting because Lane Kiffin's probably the best example of this, but Lane Kiffin having been a failed NFL head coach before, even though that was weird, it was the Raiders.
It was the Raiders.
Marcus Russell, of that. It might keep him from that, but I think the key is ID the coaches who have improved in this era. And that's who the NFL teams would want.
Solely because of their ability to manage a fluid roster. That's kind of what you're banking this around. Yeah, and I would say you'd have to have this. We're not talking scheme right now because, again, I think the conversation about scheme, the walls have never been lower, as I said earlier. And I think that there's a fast acclimation when it comes to scheme. Also, you're going to hire a veteran DC. You're going to hire a veteran OC. OC is another thing.
Also, you're not recruiting all day, so you have more time.
This is true. I think I've said this on the show before because we were talking about quality of life during coaching season, Andy. You know, I live in Nashville. There was a Titans assistant on the previous staff that was a parent at our school. And I saw that parent. I would see him at events during the season. And, I sort of am mocking incredulity here. But imagine a coordinator or a high-ranking defensive assistant or something like that at an SEC school. And you live in an SEC town and you see them on a Wednesday night. That ended up on the message boards.
My son played on teams with sons of Florida coaches.
Yeah.
We saw their moms. We didn't see their dads very much.
Well, and I think part of that is that realistically, we've all talked to enough head coaches to know that the dad could have probably popped by for practice or a game or whatever, but there's a social stigma against that. And in the NFL, there isn't. The quality of life is completely different. Now, we've been talking about head coaching positions. I think what's more interesting here is I don't know if you can prove a brain drain, because in order to convey the concept of a brain drain, you would have to have 100 NFL spots with 100 NFL assistant jobs and 100 different teams. But I do know that as soon as any assistant gets a shot, they're going to go to the NFL regardless of the situation for one, the resume bullet in case they want to come back to college and say that they were in the NFL, and two, the quality of life. Talking to assistants who are in the NFL, the quality of life is phenomenally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is you're also fighting with the young stud quality control guys in the NFL already. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. The brain drain is a little overdone because not everybody who wants these jobs can get them. They were already coveted before all this happened. And so it's not that. It's just that the skill sets have merged a little bit. And so instead of the NFL looking at college coaches differently, now they're looking at them like, oh, you can work within these confines. And I think, you know, you talk about it's not scheme, Godfrey. I think you're right. I think that the trick here is the skill is probably the better word for it. Can you connect instantly with players who have agency? And I think that's... Mm. That's the thing you didn't have to do in college before that you have to be able to do now, and the thing you always had to do in the NFL. And Urban Meyer is a great example of this.
Yes.
Urban Meyer, all-time great college head coach, goes to the NFL, cannot deal with players with agency. I would argue, and I think Urban Meyer might agree, he might struggle now in college because of that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the era of the dictator is over. I would be remiss not to mention a particular, our favorite Matthew Lillard lookalike here in Eugene, Oregon, in this segment. That kind of feels like a template for
absolutely
for the guy who would pivot to the NFL. If you think about the relationships he fosters and the fluidity of the Oregon roster at very, very key positions year to year and the consistent success in spite of that the Ducks have. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I was out in the Pacific Northwest on a family vacation. It's just I talked to a lot of Oregon fans and like that thing that it has a pro mentality about it. I don't know how to describe it. It's just, it's not an insult. It is a comparison to sort of a more traditional fan base in the Big Ten of the SEC.
You better be a badass to be here.
Yeah.
And you better be a badass to stay here, which is that is the NFL.
You know what? Actually, you know what it is, Andy? It's that because I just realized what it is. I used to go out to Oregon in the old days, like Helfrich, Willie Taggart, and mm-hmm. it was always, please God, hey, 4-star, 5-star DB from Tampa, please God, come all the way across the country and play for us. You know what it is now? You're on payroll. I don't mm-hmm. care what time zone this is. We are a professional operation. You have to deliver results. You're exactly right. That is the mentality change all the way down to the fan base in that program.
It's going to be interesting to see because like Lanning has said many times, hey, I'm here, and has turned down looks at other college jobs that obviously would pay a ton of money. But the question is, would a good NFL job, like let's say McVay wins the Super Bowl this year and is like, okay, two's plenty. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the Monday Night Football guy from now on. Sorry, Troy Aikman.
You're saying Dan Lanning to the Rams?
I'm saying Dan Lanning, Ryan Day, like that. That's all of those guys want that job.
I think Ryan Day is an interesting conversation to have because Ryan Day experienced this sort of an inverse of a typical journey for a college head coach at that level, basically being like they had put just about every nail in the cross on him, and then he handed them a national title.
Yep.
So at what point are you going to decide I'm willing to tolerate this for 5 or 10 more years? And also, we've seen the tabling off of power programs, right?
Well, and he's got a son. Now, he has other kids, too. He's younger kids, too. But he has a son who's finishing up high school football this year, who's going to play for Northwestern starting in 2027. So, like, there's a natural kind of life mile marker coming up. Yeah. And
so he's going to Wisconsin, is what you're saying, because that's nearby.
Exactly. But that's the thing. We forget about that with coaches, that they are human beings.
Yeah.
They have spouses. They have kids. And a lot of times their mile markers are similar to ours, even though they make a lot more money than us.
Yes. That would definitely be a massive shift for him and his family. There's no doubt about that. And I do think you would see dad less as an NFL head coach than you might see him even as a college head coach, because it's just much more. The thing that got Urban too, Andy, was that he didn't understand the schedule. That's mm-hmm. the thing that, and like I would want to throw one more thing out before we change the subject. I'm not going to say this about any of the specific college head coaches we've talked about, because I think they are modernizing, like to Ross's point about Dusty May. This is not a statue business. NFL head coaching.
Mm-mm.
You are not the deity. You are not like, you know, someone who would really struggle is like Dabo Sweeney, Nick Saban, did struggle.
That's where I look at Ryan Day. And like, if you've ever met Ryan Day, you're like, how is a dude this normal, the head coach at Ohio State?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. A guy who really wants to actually coach ball. They all say that, but a guy who actually wants to coach ball and be around the best talent possible that someone else is assembling, that's an NFL head coach.
Yeah. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. It really is, because I don't think, like, if this had been, as you said, Godfrey, Dusty May to the Pelicans, this guy's desperate to get out of college sports.
Yeah.
That's not what this is. He had a really good job. He got offered a really good spot. So that's probably coming for some of our favorite college football coaches. And, you know, look.
And I assume he got paid a lot of money.
Yes. Or
yeah, I mean,
Michigan
to a new deal. He hadn't signed it yet at Michigan.
Or yeah. Michigan basketball was stealing signals, and we're about to find out. And he just hauled ass to the pros.
And didn't every Michigan State person post that yesterday?
Go Blue. Just wanted to keep you guys frosty today.
Yeah, every Michigan State person was like, there is a conspiracy. There's something coming out.
I mean, look, we are conditioned to expect patterns as human beings. And a Michigan coach just hauled ass out of town usually means there's a smoldering pile of controversy tucked neatly away.
Mm. Yeah. Or it might just be that this guy was really good at the job and they believe in Dallas that he could do the job there. So,
by the way, speaking of the sign stealing, not that these two things are related, Dusty leaving in this internal report that the school athletic department is doing. We haven't seen or heard about that internal report and what might be in it.
The Sharon Moore situation.
The Moore situation. Plus, you know, it has a bunch of other stuff, I think, in it. Because I think the outside law firm that was sort of digging in, you know, as you know, they dig in on one subject, they find others, and it ends up being pretty extensive. I don't know that we'll ever see that report. Maybe we'll see a summary of it at some point. Again, not that these things are related, but there's just a lot going on, right?
At the administrative level. Everyone's mad at Ward Manuel again.
And then they don't have a school president. They hired a school president from Syracuse, Ken Severud, who then got brain cancer. So they've restarted the president's search. A lot of instability there as well going on.
Yeah, if Michigan could be normal for 5 minutes, that'd be fantastic for everybody.
Yeah, right. I know.
Well, Mike Boynton elevated to head coach, former Oklahoma State head coach. So that part of it is probably a little less weird. So we'll see how that goes. But we got to talk about what's going on in Ross's town in D.C. He was at the markup for the Protect College Sports Act last week. One very, very interesting result came out of that, and I'm curious how a bunch of different schools feel about it. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back with College Football Inquirer, and let us head to the halls of Congress, where we have spent so many of a recent episode. Ross Dellinger, you were at the markup for the Protect College Sports Act last week. And this was going on while Godfrey and Ryan Nanny were recording the previous show. So we haven't really gotten to address this yet. But what were the largest takeaways from that session?
I would say number one, the vote itself was probably a little higher than most maybe thought. It depends on which side you talk to, but 19-9 was the vote. It was a 28-member committee, and 6 Democrats voted to support it, and 2 Republicans voted against it. And so it needed 15 votes to pass, and it got 4 above that, which I think most people would have said, that's a pretty good margin. It's 2/3. It's a 2/3 margin of the committee. So that's number one. Number two was something that happened right before the committee. The markup was the change to the anti-Super League, anti-expansion provision in the bill. To try to appease the SEC and Big Ten, they applied the anti-expansion provision to the other power leagues as well, not just the SEC and Big Ten. It didn't work because they didn't agree to support the bill anyway, but that was a change. You know, there was a few substantive changes. I think one of the biggest ones for me was the change to the applicability section of the bill, which means they went from the bill overriding, but like if the bill were to pass into law, it would have overridden eligibility cases such as Trinidad Chambliss potentially or other pending eligibility cases. Now they change that to where it only would override pending sports wagering cases. And it's not coincidental that all this was happening as the Brendan Sorsby stuff unfolded. So that was the change. There was a few other things, but those are like the key topics for me. But the main thing is the Big Ten and SEC continue to be against this. And not only that, but as y'all probably saw in my story after the markup, Marie Cantwell specifically, but Ted Cruz as well, continues to be very critical of the SEC and Big Ten and really sort of turning the knife in with every comment.
But okay, let's talk about what they did, which is essentially froze in amber the current conference structure, because the initial bill said if you distribute more than $1 billion annually, you can't add any members if this bill passes, which is that would be the SEC and the Big Ten. They've now added the ACC and the Big 12 to that mix. So they can't add any members. But if I'm Boise State, I'm pissed because now I can't move up.
Right.
Yeah.
If I'm Miami and I'm Clemson and I'm Florida State, I'm pissed because I can't move
up. Andy, if you are any school, who cares? If you are any fan base that cares and you are in the Big 12 or ACC, the American, et cetera, on down, this is bad for you. Because as much as you bemoan the Big Two, and you should, I understand. You also would drop everything tomorrow for an invitation to either of the Big Two conferences. One of the dumber things, and it's hard to parse this, that Ted Cruz has said consistently. He lied on your show. He lied on everybody else's show, Andy. He lied about Rice in the hearing.
Rice would still play football.
My favorite is TCU. Could you, Andy? Could you imagine TCU? I can't even do it. I'm doing an old South accent.
He didn't really have much of an accent.
My contempt. Yeah. Well, what does that say about the Ivies? My contempt here is it borders on like I'm almost apoplectic. So he has used TCU as this example over and over and over again. What Ted Cruz actually just did via this bill is prevent the TCU situation, the resurgence, from ever happening again. Because the last time we had, actually two times ago, that we had a seismic disruption of the order of college football, because all this is happening before, and it will also all happen again, regardless if this passes, TCU was cast out of the top of college football and into the hinterlands when the Big 12 was formed because of local politics, specifically because of the meddling of
TCU
the Texas governor.
It was in the 16-team WAC, in the super WAC.
Yes.
It had to climb out of that hole.
So Ann Richards was the governor of Texas at the time. She pushed her alma mater, Baylor, into the newly formed Big 12 in the early 1990s. I'll be really fast about this. TCU had sat on its hands for a long time, probably had not modernized and invested in football as much as it should. It then spent the better part of 15 years essentially wandering through the Group of Five and clawing its way back to relevance before finally receiving and accepting a bid to the Big 12. By the way, I'm talking about it was in the Big East. It was in the WAC. It was in Conference USA. Am I leaving one out, Andy? I think it was four total. Were they ever in the American?
Yeah, I don't think they were in the Sun Belt ever.
They were never in the Sun Belt, I can tell you that.
Pretty much everything else.
So what Ted Cruz has effectively done is actually made his false claim true. You could not find any kind of resurgence if you were a program right now that was trying to claw its way up, spend more money, invest in athletics, and gain better and bigger membership with more revenue to a better conference. You can't do that if this bill passes.
Ross, are they allowed to contract any of these leagues? Or is membership fixed based on the way it's written?
Well, a lot of people are interpreting it different ways based on the way it's written. I think basically the interpretation I've heard is that if you're in the Power Four, I don't know how you would be able to contract.
If somebody tried to be the Pittsburgh Pirates and just take all the conference revenue distribution and not actually invest it into the football program, could they kick them out?
Yeah, they could. Yeah, because it's only written as an acquired school. If you're above $700 million in revenue, you can acquire.
Problems.
Yeah, you could. I guess you could still conceivably kick out members. Yeah, which is certainly a
But then they couldn't be acquired by anyone else.
Well, they could be acquired by the G6, I guess.
I guess. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there would be no lawsuits if any of this happened. Of
course. No, not at all. Well, what's happening too now is since all that came out on Thursday, I think there's, you know, the ramifications are being sort of understood on the Hill a little more as they hear from Group of Six programs, including several in their states and footprint. Remember, Washington State is
maybe
right
talking
in the
to
backyard.
Them beforehand would have been helpful. Yeah.
Washington State, right in the backyard of one of the senators involved, Marie Cantwell of Washington, and Washington State is often used by her, I think, as an example of what she doesn't want to see happen anymore, which is Washington State getting left
behind. And she's now made it where they can never get back.
And now, and so I think that there's meetings, there's meetings and discussions about what to potentially do about this. You know, this bill is so prescriptive. It's now up to, I think, 116 pages. And it gets so specific that anytime you change one little thing because you've gotten so specific, it sort of unspools something else. And that's sort of kind of what we're seeing happen.
I can't wait till it gets stapled onto a defense bill in a last ditch attempt to pass it at the 11th hour of this Congress. But that's neither here nor there. I am. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, you know, this is one of many issues that that are being pointed out, not just by the Big Ten and SEC, but plenty of others in the bill. And I think another big one is this associated entity provision in the bill that basically allows any or prohibits any school-affiliated business from doing a deal with an athlete. Even if they clear the fair market value and even if they clear the range of compensation through the clearinghouse and all that, this bill, the way it's written and is interpreted, it would prohibit. So it'd prohibit millions and millions of dollars from multimedia rights holders.
Ooh,
and
see,
corporate
okay, they're,
sponsors.
Yeah, they're going after the corporate partner favored middlemen. Like,
yeah,
the schools don't want that. Like, I don't know.
It depends on the school.
How many times have we said,
Andy,
if you beg Congress to solve your problems, they may not solve them in the way you want. Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be for this provision and support of it if there was a raised cap, a significantly raised cap in the Big Ten and SEC.
They are addicted to middlemen. Mm. And if this went through, you know what would happen? The middleman would set up not affiliated with the school. And they'd be like, this isn't actually affiliated with, and they would do the same thing.
There's always a loophole and a workaround.
These people want to find a way to slide 15% to their cronies.
It's a 100-year.
They're addicted to it. They cannot help themselves.
It's a 100-year history of trying to stamp out bagmen and bagmen laughing all the way to a new successful format of.
Oh, this isn't even the bagman. The bagman's been priced out.
No,
this
I mean,
is
I'm,
new
I'm not.
You, it's the new version of the bagman.
Yes, thank you, Ross. I'm not using
bagman.
I'm not using
it's
that.
The corporate bagman.
So the bagman mom and pop has been shut down by bagman Walmart, is what we're saying.
Yes, that's right.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
As and by the way, as it should have been. And now they corporatized that concept. But by the way, you're never, ever, ever going to stamp this out. I've said my piece 1,000 times on this. My only, I guess, new observation is how depressing it is when this bill went to markup to immediately see the NCAA, even now, even after all these years, even after Charlie Baker taking over and saying, we're going to be a new NCAA, we're going to embrace the times, we're going to try and modernize, we're going to try and work with the athlete.
Kinder, gentler NCAA.
The first thing the NCAA did when this thing went to markup was to suggest a rollback of almost every damn thing that has happened since Alston. And that isn't going to ever happen. I'm watching these plaintiff's attorneys on Twitter just be like, please God pass this. Please God pass this. I will make tens of millions of dollars. So it just, it's Ross, like to me, that's the definition of the worthlessness that I apply to this entire process. Because if you give these sides all their druthers, it's like people crowding a lifeboat right now. There's so much attached to this bill. It's never going to survive.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's heavy. One of the things I was going to say is, you know, by the time people listen to this, it'll probably potentially already be done, is that, you know, the 5-year age-based eligibility rule is going to end up probably passing today. If not today, then tomorrow. But by the time you listen to this, it might have already been passed. And it reminded me when Godfrey said plaintiff attorneys, because, you know, the NCAA did not make it retroactive and did not exempt all the players who had completed 4 years and would, under this new rule, get a 5th year. They didn't exempt them in. You can imagine if there'll be some kind of class action or some kind of lawsuit by plaintiff attorneys for those, on behalf of those players who did not get that 5th year. I'm sure that's going to be on the way.
It's going to be so much fun. Hey, well, UCF's trying to get another year for a Kansas transfer. Mm. And Cody Campbell's having some fun with that one since UCF's AD went after Texas Tech on the Sorsby thing. So, there will be more lawsuits. That's the gist of it. Kyle Saunders, who's a political science professor at Colorado State, has been writing some interesting things about this. There's something he wrote after the markup session that I thought was really interesting, not just in the examination of what they did, but obviously he studies lawmaking in general. And so his application of the schedule and how many hurdles this would have to clear just from a scheduling standpoint, this will be wild if it goes anywhere.
Yeah, people keep asking me about a timeline. You know, they're in session this week. It's the last week of session before they take about a 2-week break for 4th of July. Then the Senate is back for, I think, actually 4 weeks before they have the August recess. So they've got about, working days wise, you know, they've got about like 17, 18 days, the Senate does, to pass this by the time the August recess gets here, which is kind of their goal, which is the first week of August. They go on break after the first week of August, the Senate does. And then it would have to be taken up, by the House. And that would happen in September when you get really close to the midterm election and election season, and it just gets really hard. But you know, people keep asking me too, right? And we've talked about it on the show. What are the chances? I think the chances increased based on, honestly, the amount of Democrats that voted for the bill in committee. I think the chances probably increased, not dramatically, but I'm starting to think that Charlie Baker's initial projection of it being a prediction of a 50-50 is probably more likely, you know, that this thing is sort of a coin flip. But it's going to take, it's going to, the SEC, it's hard for me to see Congress passing legislation that regulates an industry without the industry's two biggest stakeholders. So something's going to have to give there. Either the SEC and Big Ten are going to win against it, lobbying against it, and are going to convince their lawmakers to vote against it, or either Congress is going to make enough changes to the bill that the SEC and Big Ten maybe don't support it publicly, but don't try to lobby hard against it.
Pull the teeth out of it,
One or the other, the thing probably is, going to
like,
happen
it, it's a little bit, the dynamics are weird, because like you talk about the SEC and the Big Ten getting their lawmakers. But the problem is, Ted Cruz is one of the SEC's lawmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's also
Eric Schmidt of Missouri.
One of the Big 12 lawmakers.
Well, he's Cody Campbell. He's Cody Campbell's lawmaker. Yeah. He's on payroll.
Yeah. Like Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, those delegations probably, yes, that they're going to vote along SEC party.
Roger Wicker has voted this thing down.
Voted no in the committee.
Yeah. Two words. Yeah.
Which was interesting, though.
Trinidad Chambliss. It's very simple.
Yeah.
Which was interesting, though, what Roger Wicker's vote was, and I didn't get into it in my story, and people probably wouldn't understand it, but it can be better maybe said on a podcast. When they went around the room to vote, they got to Roger Wicker, and he said pass. And so he wanted to vote at the very end. And the theory is he wanted to make sure the bill was going to get through committee without his vote. So if it needed his vote,
he would have done it.
It would have been interesting. It would have been interesting. Politics at play.
That's because Roger Wicker.
Room, right.
Sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead, Ross. I mean, I just want to explain to everybody. Anyone who's ever written a check to Roger Wicker's campaign has a reserve spot in the Grove. If Trinidad Chambliss is retroactively removed from this season's competition, those checks will never appear again.
Well, they did. They changed that. They changed that. So it's only for sports wagering cases now. So there's no, I don't think there's any way that that could happen, although it could have happened the way it was originally written.
But Ross, that change did not occur until a couple days ago, right?
No. That was one of the revisions made between when the bill was released and when the markup started. Now, Roger might or not realize that. I don't know. I mean, he might not have realized that change was already previously made. Look, I mean, you know, Roger Wicker is very much right in the middle of SEC footprint. So I'm sure he's hearing a lot from the SEC folks.
Yeah. Right?
Either way, Godfrey, it wouldn't have mattered.
How about this? How about this, Ross? I can barnacle onto your reporting by adding specifically that I have knowledge Roger Wicker has been told not to promote this, not to vote for this, not to advance this, specifically by people who are deeply concerned about the future of, I don't know, maybe a historically terrible SEC football program that has suddenly found relevance in the last 2 to 3 years.
There you go.
Yeah. Maybe. Why would you want to change the rules back to the old ones when you didn't win?
Hey, man, because look, the Independence Bowl is only so appealing, all right?
Not since Pool and Weeder stopped sponsoring it.
It's a fun stadium. I mean, look, you go to Casino Buffet.
Like, that's the best bowl gift ever as a 47-year-old dad.
Oh, hang on. Let's think that through. Does this mean, like, if I go to the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces, do I get a missile? Like, I mean, like, how are we walking this out to its fullest extent?
Yeah. Does Sikorsky sponsor a game? Can you get a helicopter?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like, Helicopter used to sponsor the Armed Forces.
I know. Get a helicopter. Can I fly a helicopter for as long as I can keep it in the air?
I will take the helicopter over the Weed Eater, I guess. I don't know.
I'm just sitting here thinking about, like, I know I don't care about Cheez-Its or Pop-Tarts. Sorry, guys.
I care about Pop-Tarts, but if you're going to give me a helicopter. All right, when we come back. Some people took something Godfrey and I said last week. Maybe the wrong way. So I think we're going to have to clarify a little bit.
I don't know why. I'm so soft-spoken and kind.
We'll be right back. We are back with College Football Inquirer, and Stephen Godfrey and I are taking some heat from friends in the Big 12 and other places for what I guess came across as a desire to have a Super League.
Yeah. Do you want to start?
I want to have a conversation about what the job is and how this works. Mm-hmm. And I've had this situation with coaches before. And also their spouses, where people have gotten really mad at me because I've written something or said something about a coach that is about to get fired. And they've taken it to mean that I want that coach fired.
Correct.
I'm not saying I want the coach fired. I'm saying the coach is going to get fired.
Yeah. This, by the way, this happens to all of us, right? In just reporting. Yeah. Sometimes we're just reporting the facts and all of a sudden it gets contorted into like, oh, you think this.
I know where it comes from. It's from me saying, how did you feel in your loins when Pete Bavakwa, the Notre Dame athletic director, gave you that sample schedule if Notre Dame was part of a Super League?
Which you had in your loins.
Loins reporting. Instead of sources, Super League. Instead of sources, so, it should say loins, colon.
Loins.
Exactly. Loins, colon.
Yeah, no, it's you know what? You guys are much more professional than I am. So Andy brought up a good. There is a current FBS head coach who, to this day, when I run into him, hates my guts because I broke that he got fired from another gig, and that's Major Applewhite. Mm-hmm. Shout out Major! Yeah. Every time I see Major Applewhite, he's mad at me because I broke that he got fired from Houston. Mm-hmm. That's it. I didn't say I cared because guess what? I don't. I broke when I was at SB Nation that he was getting fired from Houston. And to this day, I ran into him when he was the OC for Kane Womack at USA. And I seriously thought the guy was going to fight me. Like, it's just some guys hold a grudge. Now, that's silly. And that's why I call it out, because it's funny and I like to stir it. Fans, I actually understand more, Andy. So there are a lot of people that are upset with us that are that are lifelong fans of like Iowa State and Kansas State and the ACC schools that are not Clemson and Florida State and Miami. We're going to talk about Miami in a second because I think there's a good conversation there based off of what their leadership is saying. I have said from the beginning that these are the people that are truly going to lose out. And so I want to be really clear about something. And also, I'm drinking coffee out of my fancy Sunbelt mug. Thank you to the Sunbelt. I'm probably the only one here who gets excited about what the Sunbelt slate is going to be in the middle of October. All right?
That's not true.
Okay, I'm just saying, well, when we put the show together, nobody does it but me. I have made my peace with the fact that, you know, there are a lot of articles written this week about the stuff that's going on in D.C., Ross, and that Vitello and Sankey are going to be the, you know, the people responsible for the death of the sport.
Not
the former Tennessee baseball coach. Who's now the Giants manager.
Here's why. In the first segment, we didn't have time for this in the first segment, but I have Vitello's bio on my other screen right now because I was going to be like, hey, there's a cautionary tale on hiring baseball. College coaches. The MLB is not going to hire a college coach for a while after what's going on with the
different
Giants.
Different animal, different sport.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. There's a lot of histrionic stuff going on about like, oh, you know, the commissioners of the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be responsible. Never trust anybody who tells you that the college football is about to die. That's why we made my company made a tongue-in-cheek titled miniseries called Who Killed College Football. It's just always in a state of perpetual change. I don't think 136 teams are equal. I don't think that's controversial. I've got speaking of free stuff, you guys got to loosen your ethics. I'm going to go work out later. Look at ULM workout gear. Okay. ULM does not belong in the same universe as Alabama. And we know that. And everybody, even ULM, I think my guys down in the bayou would tell you that. Well, those days are over. And unfortunately, I'm going to say that as a lifelong Georgia Southern fan too. Go Gator. The people who are victims here, I'm trying to get to my damn point, are the Iowa States, the Kansas States, the Virginia Techs, the NC States, all those schools that I try and mention. I am not telling you, and Andy is not telling you, that it is a good thing that the Super League is coming. What we are telling you is that it is coming, okay? This has already happened, and the anger and the angst and the pain, all of this should be directed at something that happened, 4 years ago now, guys? When Red River was annexed into the SEC, essentially wrote the epitaph for about those 35 to 50 programs in the middle. Is that fair, right, Andy?
Yeah, and it's not a matter of wanting this to happen or being excited about it happening or being able to say anything that's going to change it. They don't listen to us. They don't care what we think.
Not at all.
Because I've said, don't change it.
Yes.
Like with the playoff, I've said, I think it's better at 12. That'd be great. That's how most people feel. But they're not going to stop there. They're going to make it 24. So should I not tell you that they're going to make it 24?
Yes.
We have to, because they're going to do it. And I don't want people to be surprised when they do.
When people got upset, I think what Andy and I were referencing is Ross set up kind of the current state of the build. This was pre-markup. Mm-hmm. And what we said was that basically at that point, the restrictions were all levied against the two stakeholders. Right. And what Andy and I said was, this is going to create the Super League. We didn't say that as like a, yes, we're finally going to get rid of them.
It's the SEC and the Big Ten going, don't threaten me with a good time.
Yes, basically. Exactly. I don't think that you can have college football without Manhattan, Kansas, and Blacksburg, Virginia. Those are the two teams every year when EA sends me the game, I either fire up K-State or Virginia Tech. I love these programs. I think it's a wonderful tapestry. We are headed to a different world. I think that those teams and those conferences should have some kind of way to compete in the postseason, to compete in the season. I want to see those stadiums full. I want those fan bases to feel like they're justified in their existence. But what I'm telling you right now is that two stakeholders, and by the way, I am not a fan of either commissioner at all, but to sit here and talk about how it's these commissioners and these leagues and not mention the television networks who are doing this is insane to me. Okay, the TV networks bolstered the Big Two into doing this.
Yeah,
I don't want any of this to happen, but I'm telling you, this is America. America is not a country; it's a business, and the people who can get paid will get paid. And I'm sorry, I don't want anybody at NC State or one of these schools to be mad at me, or that one guy on Iowa State who's like threatening jihad. I should never mention angry tweets because then it just like it.
They're going to sell beer there now, by the way. I'm really happy about that.
I love Ames, Iowa.
They're going to sell beer at the games now.
I love Ames, Iowa, dude. Natty Light, burn a couch. God bless you. But unfortunately, right now, we are headed to an inevitable conclusion. And I think that what put this in motion happened 6 years ago, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And we didn't stop it then. We can't stop it now.
I mean, like Larry Scott, who's been made fun of a lot. He was the Pac-10 commissioner, then the Pac-12 commissioner. He tried to make it the Pac-16. All he did was take a naturally occurring idea and try to make it go faster.
Yes. When the Pac-12 was torn asunder, I don't remember any of these fans of these schools who are mad right now really caring one way or the other, because the other problem with fandom is you have this...
They were mad when it was going to be the Big 12 in 2010.
Right. That's what I'm headed towards is you always have this problem of like, well, that doesn't involve me. That doesn't bother me. The flesh eating hyena, the face eating hyena, as we say in the internet. Oh, well, it didn't bite my face off. So I'm sure the face eating hyena doesn't want to bite my face off. Guess what? It's going to bite all your faces off. Okay. And by the way, if you're sitting here or listening to this and you're smug and you're a South Carolina fan or a Mississippi State fan or a Purdue fan, stay frosty. Your day will come too.
That brings us to Joe Echevarria, the new president at University of Miami. And something he said, and this was posted by the official University of Miami account, by the way.
Yeah.
And he said, "We as a university are playing for the next contract, not playing for the one we're in. So however the realignments occur, whatever may occur, we are going to be invited where the leading one is. They won't leave us out. We'll be far too relevant and too big a brand," which I found very interesting given the way the bill went.
Yeah.
The state, of the situation. I think, you know, there's two camps that are, well, there's probably three camps that are upset over this provision in the bill. The G6, like we talked about, being frozen out of the A4, those in the Big 12 and ACC, specifically the ACC, like a Miami, that want to move up. And then, of course, the Big 10 and SEC, just in general, because they're being told what to do. They don't want to be told what to do in the future by the federal government, although they ask them for help, and this is what happens. But so it's going to be curious to see how this provision develops in the future and what changes are made, because I think all of those camps are calling their senators about this issue and what it can mean for the future. And something tells me that this will be changed at some point.
Well, right. And it's interesting because this is something that if you're Florida State and Miami before this, you're calling Marco Rubio and Rick Scott going, "Yeah, we're pretty good. We're kind of good with this.
Yeah.
We're all right with this. We'd like you to, we'd like the SEC and the Big Ten to be able to expand though." Now they're like, "We don't want this."
I want to be clear on one other thing. I have tried to point out the hypocrisy and the corruption of like Ted Cruz involved in this. I think this part of this process, and maybe Ross can tell me if I'm right or wrong, this feels like the Cantwell influence. And as if I'm sitting here telling you all the Republicans involved are terminally corrupt, and I believe that, all the Democrats involved here are terminally naive, which, guess what? I just described most of the American political machine in the last 20 years.
I said Marco Rubio. Yeah. Sorry. Forgot. He's in the cabinet now. Ashley Moody.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. I'm sure Rubio would get involved. He wouldn't do something stupid that would hurt college sports, like get Bill Belichick a coaching job, would he? No, he wouldn't do that. shout out to the New Yorker. That was a great piece.
Speaking of NFL college skill sets not necessarily merging.
Hey, I didn't want to bring it up in that segment because I was trying to be professional.
Well, Godfrey, you mentioned a good point, which is just a little bit of the difficulty from folks outside of the college athletics industry who are not in it every day, like a lot of lawmakers and their staffs, writing a bill to regulate it. Specific of a bill to regulate it. Like, this is not, right, the only issue in the bill. Look at how about the Lane Kiffin rule? It applies to assistant coaches, too. Well, that can be a problem for assistant coaches who want to leave for a head coaching job in the middle or toward the end of a season. The provision obviously states that you have to stay through your your team's season. So like that's a good example.
Another example, we go back to the good old days where they took the jobs and they just lied about it till 2 days after National Signing Day in February.
We were all okay with that in a weird way. I want to reiterate. Yes, there is the sort of consistent and predictable corruption on the Cruz side, but some of the features of this bill reek of like Ross, like you're saying, an almost uninformed, well-intentioned naivete that has like just terminally afflicted the Democratic Party. And Cantwell is not an exception. I understand it comes from a good human place. I do believe that she has looked in. I told y'all when I got back from up there 2 weeks ago, I was like, man, talking to college football fans in Washington and Oregon specifically was so interesting because it is the best of times and the worst of times for those four FBS programs that dominate the culture of that state. I understand Cantwell's sensitivity and the intention, but that is how you pave a road to hell. And someone should have told her, you're actually hurting Washington State with this a hell of a lot more than you're hurting Washington.
Yeah. I think that there's, even beyond the coach and Lane Kiffin rule, right? I think there's some other things too, including the transfer portal, where they want to set a transfer portal date for 5 weeks for every sport, five weeks after that sport is over. But that can really present some logistical challenges. And the NCAA sent them a memo about that change
as a concept.
Right? It can prove, especially for like baseball. Wait, right?
Do they know when the MLB draft is?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of issues here that need to get, as some folks might say, cleaned up. Another one that's being raised, the last one I'll mention, is the Olympic sport provision that would require schools that are in the power leagues and even some in the G6, because if you make at least $80 million in revenue, you are required to maintain your Olympic sport roster and scholarship funding. And that's something that is what's called an unfunded mandate. So a lot of folks in college are asking me, is the USOPC going to lend us a couple $1 billion to help?
Why should they? They've had college football paying for development all this time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. But now, Andy, the player, you got to pay the college football players.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you don't get your subsidy anymore. Oh, you might have to pay for it yourself. Oh, we got to fund your country club sport now. Huh. Crazy.
They're not all country club sports, Andy, but yeah, most of them are.
Yes. Most of them are.
I just wanted you to get the last word in for once. Yeah. No, take it home.
Guys, I got to tell you. Hmm? I went through this weekend thinking, I don't know, we got to talk about the markup, but I don't know what else we're going to talk about. And then Dusty May happened. Like, this is just, it's one of those times, like, you just never know. So we'll be back on Thursday. Who knows what happens between now and then? Who knows?